Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Smi shag of a brown house a geishach, risha podcast, hashinye ex Scotcon, anan dunijin alopin. You are listening to the podcast, the one and only Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger and Summer, and so is Stephanie. She's Ginger and Summer, and she's me, and I'm you. And if you can be me, then I'll give you a prize. Enjoy. We're at Scotcon. It's great.
Welcome to episode 164 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. There was something. I learned one thing this week, that what I thought was Marsley is pronounced parsley. Marsley.
Wait, are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. Meryl said that apparently on an interview.
It's pronounced with a P?
No, it's pronounced like parsley, so it's Marsley.
Oh, I'm like, you are pulling my crap. No, okay,
it's pronounced like parsley, meaning Marsley.
How have we said it in your head the last 20 years?
Probably like Marsali.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that's...
Really,
isn't that how,
it's Marsley?
Isn't that how Davina said it?
I'm pretty sure, because if she had said it in different... I have never heard Marsley in my life. If I had ever... That's what you meant when you texted me parsley, and I was like, what the F?
Yeah,
I thought you had some kind parsley, of major Marsley. Typo from her name.
Marsley. In the vein of parsley, Marsley was cast this week.
Can't do it.
I know,
okay,
it's
just
hard.
Just for me, say Marsali, and then
I won't
we'll go,
do it. I can't. We'll say Leg Hair's daughter was cast this week.
Rest in peace, Marsali. This episode
Welcome
is going to be called Rest in Peace, Marsali. That's the episode. Okay.
And they cast a one Lauren Lyle to play Miss Marsley.
Stop it now. No more. No more.
I can't help it. It's the truth.
So, yes, that was the actual announcement. And yes. Then something that wasn't an announcement, like a casting announcement by the powers that be, something that was confirmed, although a lot of people thought maybe or hoped that Wee Fergus would be in season 3. And those of us who have, those of you who have joined us for the read along thus far, know that he's in it. At least until early chapters, and something big and bad and dirty, not dirty, but big and bad happens. And I guess they could, probably with certain involved. Technically, I guess they could just do Adult Fergus and then just allude to it, but you can't, Adult Fergus, what's his name? César, there's no way he can play Baby Fergus. Fergus. So I am just happy that he confirmed. So today, we're recording this Thursday evening, October 6th, 2016. And again, not an announcement, but Romain Baru, if that's the correct pronunciation, tweeted that Wee Fergus will be in season 3 for, quote, a while.
For a little
and
while.
I am so happy.
How much are you going to cry if, like, his name is actually pronounced Caesar Dumboy?
I wouldn't cry, like, about Marsali.
No, I mean, but it was a little disappointing when Stanley Weber's name was Stanley Weber. Come on.
I was like, thank God I can pronounce it. And technically it's Weber, but I know he's not German. He has to have German in him somewhere. Yes, he's totally French. I get it. So that's the...
That is announcement-ish. So. Now, on to our relong. This week, we will be discussing Chapter 9, entitled The Wanderer.
For 2 weeks after he arrived, Gray was able to maintain his resolve to not engage Jamie. But then he had to. A messenger, Mr. Rufus Allison, told Gray that there was someone very ill who was staying in the lime tree in the village, and he wasn't likely to live long. We learned that the messenger had mentioned, quote, gold, unquote, and his ears had honed in on this, Gray's had. The ill man had been found that morning wandering near the village. His clothes were soaked with damp and seawater, and he was out of his mind with fever. He was babbling, and his rescuers were not able to make sense of what he was saying. They believed he was Scottish, but he was speaking an, quote, incoherent mixture of French and Gaelic, with here and there the odd word of English thrown in, and one of those words had been gold, unquote. It was the combination of the word gold and the mixture of the three tongues and their being in this area of Scotland that brought only one thought to anyone who heard him. The Frenchman's gold.
Can we just stop for a second?
Sure.
The mixture of the three tongues. Is this like some sort of menage?
I mean. This is almost straight from Diana. This is not from me. She used the word combination. I just use mixture.
Maybe it just sounds dirtier when you say it.
You always say things like that. So there were rumors about it. Some stories about the gold. Some stories said that it had been hidden by the Highland army before Culloden. Others said that it had never reached the prince, but was left in a cave near the place where it had arrived. And still others said its hiding place had been lost, while yet others, there's a lot of others, said that it was still known, but kept secret. And then hadn't been found. Now, Gray did speak some French. He knew he couldn't trust anyone from the village to assist him in interpreting. This gold also had not only monetary value to the crown, but it had value to John. Finding it would get him out of Ardsmuir and back to London, put him back in the good graces of the army. Now, there was only one alternative. Jamie. He was the only one there who spoke English, Gaelic, and French. Now, Summer, I think that John would have broken this resolve, his resolve eventually, but I do think that he would have held out longer than 2 weeks if the Wanderer hadn't come into the picture at right that time. What do you think?
I mean, necessity is the mother of invention, so I think eventually he would have been driven from boredom alone. To seek him out. But the necessity of the situation definitely, I think, brought it to a head sooner.
Diana now refers to John as, in this next little section, as the governor and Jamie as the Scot. It's interesting how she takes our point of view, makes the reader look at things slightly differently. Now, Jamie looked different, John notices. He had a short beard, a calm though wary face, and he gave no sign of recognition. John explains to Jamie why he was summoned. He tells him about the man found wandering the moor and what he was saying. And he tells him he needs him to act as interpreter. Now, at first, Jamie declines. He says he's a prisoner, not an interpreter. And John replies that his, quote, assistance would be appreciated. Conversely, a failure to render legitimate assistance, to which Jamie pulls up and tells him that he may not extort his services or threaten him. John, this whole time, is handling a letter opener. Dude, protection? Wariness, perhaps?
Jamie played him like a fiddle. He went in there, not even knowing what was going down, and got exactly what he wanted out of the situation.
Absolutely.
To a T.
John says that he didn't threaten him, to which Jamie replies, "Did you know? Well, and I'm pleased to hear it."
He's like, okay then, but then if you didn't, then I'm good to go.
Joe B. writes, Lord John sets up this first meeting to give himself the illusion of power over Jamie, and neither man indicates recognition of the other. Jamie infers that the Wanderer is likely a Jacobite, given the language mix, but he declines Lord John's request. And a battle of wits ensues. Lord John and Jamie recognize the importance of language. Language itself is a feature for these chapters. It's the device used to orchestrate their meeting and a weapon both used to defend their positions. Just as Jamie is about to leave, John tells him that if he helps him, he will have his irons removed. And Jamie says that he has a bargain. And that's what you meant by John, by he plays John, right?
Oh my God. Like Lord John Grey at this point is woefully unprepared to deal with James Frazier.
I'm telling you, he needed more than 2 weeks to get his.
He was not ready.
To get ready. Exactly. Lisa T writes, and so thanks to Lord John, Jamie is no longer in chains. One more step in reclaiming his life. Martina P. writes, first of all, I think that Jamie recognized Lord John as soon as he entered the room on their first encounter at Arsmere. Maybe even before, as soon as he learned the name of Colonel Quarry's replacement. We do know that Jamie has a poker face. I initially thought it was a rather bold choice that he refused to interpret for Lord John. Should have known better. Jamie is an intelligent man and managed to get his irons removed.
Poker face always makes me think of Lady Gaga.
Poker for fit. Yeah, sorry, okay. That was really bad.
Totally wrong key. Totally wrong key, but yes.
And I also exactly. Stuttered, but yes. Well, she
it's kind of hard that you stuttered in the middle of a song where you actually are supposed to stutter.
I'm supposed to stutter, I know.
Which was kind of funny.
Diana's description of their arrival at the inn and the sounds the English made in the dark, echoing the sounds that the English troops had made 10 years before, is a bit haunting. Grey had required 3 things in return for Jamie having his irons removed. That he wouldn't attempt to escape during their journey to or from the village. Remember that. During their journey to and from the village, Jamie kept his ding-dong word.
What? To, he kept what? His ding-dong?
Word. Word. Jamie kept his ding-dong. Word. Word. God, stop it. Second, that he would give a full and true account of all the wanderer would say. And third, that he would give his word as a gentleman to speak to no one but Grey of what he learned. Lisa T. writes, this little adventure marks the beginning of Lord John's and Jamie's friendship.
Well, the beginning of their relationship. Not a spoiler,
but a tiny bit of a spoiler. Relationship is probably a better word, but yeah. Yes. As they enter the inn, there is a priest that they see. The man, they are told, the wanderer, is dying. There is little time to get this done.
Wanderer. Does that make you think of the host as well?
The host, yes. I told you that last week, and you freaked out on me. You said, do not mention Stephanie Meyer in this.
We shouldn't, but you know what? I wasn't mentioning Stephanie Meyer. I just mentioned the book. You were the
by
one who mentioned
Stephanie team.
Yeah, I didn't go that far.
Anyway, we are told what happened in retrospect. The man had died just before dawn, Jamie holding one of his hands, the priest the other. Jamie was by his side the entire night. And when it's over, he and Grey head toward the stairs. He tells Grey that it didn't make much sense, but relays what the man had said. There was talk of a white witch and seals. Joe B. writes, all the reader is told is that it was seeming gibberish and a white witch was mentioned. And the mention of the white witch is the first link to Claire in this section. Grey feels, quote, oddly comfortable, unquote. Jamie told him again what the man had said. The man, Grey thinks, was talking gibberish, and then it's time for them to head back. Martina P. writes, when they ride down to the inn together, Lord John watched Jamie very closely, and the tenderness with which he attended the old man touched him deeply. While we are in Lord John's point of view, the reader can easily assess how his feelings toward Jamie are shifting from rage to, well, something else.
Was it ever really rage, though? It was more like embarrassment. Like, not
but not
really
what she's inferring that it changes to.
No, but I'm just saying what he started with wasn't really rage per se. It was more just like embarrassment, like hot embarrassment.
Oh, from like the last chapter? Yeah.
I'm talking about how he originally felt about Jamie.
Yeah.
Okay.
They stop in the morning at a spring to freshen up. Grey drinks from the spring and Jamie is picking watercress. He tells him it's to eat and it's green. So Jamie tells Lord John. He says it will stop you from getting scurvy and loose teeth. And he tells him he learned it from his wife. And then Grey asks where his wife is.
Angrily. From my wife.
Yeah, he snaps at him. Then Grey asks where his wife is. Jamie retorts, my wife is gone. And that was it. Joe B. writes, Jamie is keeping up Claire's habit of eating greens. And again, Lord John relives the night at Carriarrick, feeling sorrow for the passing of a loved one, mixed with some relief that there are no more witnesses to his shame. So he thinks now. Deborah C. writes, Jamie is still following Claire's advice and eating greens, even nettles. He is also helping his men avoid scurvy by collecting the green plants and ordering them to eat them. Eileen P. writes, while Jamie tries to hide his reaction to Lord John's question about Claire, Lord John sees the power of hate and despair in his eyes. Jamie rarely speaks of Claire. He tries to keep his feelings contained. He is a prisoner and has no control over his circumstances, but he can try to control his feelings. Yet through Lord John's eyes, the reader gets a powerful glimpse of Jamie's unveiled emotions and feels Jamie's heartbreaking loss. 3 days later, Jamie escapes. Apparently, it wasn't very difficult to escape the prison. It's just that no one did because there was no place to go.
Well, they mentioned that like two chapters ago.
I know. 3 miles away was the coast and the other three sides of the prison in the area. There's only more land. But apparently, Jamie had a reason because no one did that without a reason or a plan. Now, Gray leads the search for Jamie. It is his duty to attempt to recapture him, but he went beyond this. He stripped the garrison for his search party and then urged them on with only the briefest of stops for rest and food. He was desperate. He wanted to get that gold and get the heck out of Dodge. I mean, Ardsmuir. He was angry at Jamie and felt an odd sense of personal betrayal, as Diana writes. As they search for him, one of his men thinks he sees something, and someone points out that, nah, it's only a seal. Now, Gray had never seen one before, either, as this other man had not. And he remembers, however, being allowed to touch his mother's seal coat once as a child. The soldier who had recognized the seals said, quote, the Scots call them silkies. And he relates a little bit about the folklore of the silkies, and that is that sometimes one will come ashore and leave off his skin, and inside is a beautiful woman. If a man should find the skin and hide it so she can't go back, she's forced to stay and be his wife.
What a terribly misogynistic story. Steal a woman's clothes and she has to marry you?
Most fairy tales are.
Nah.
So they search, but to no avail. Gray remembers that the man at the lime tree had come from the sea. He had been soaked in seawater. Now, one soldier thinks that if Jamie had come that way to the sea, then he was gone. It was too treacherous to survive long out there like this. The spot that they were at was called the Devil's Cauldron, quote, because of the way it boils down all the time. Fishermen drowned off this coast are seldom found, unquote. Well, the next day, Gray mentally prepares for the return to Ardsmuir. He has a feeling in his gut and excuses himself to do the necessary. So he literally has a feeling in his gut, not an inkling, but like a thing. And he goes over kind of out of the vision sight line of people so we can have a little bit of privacy. As he finishes, Diana writes, quote, straightening up from what too late struck him as a most undignified posture, Gray raised his head and looked straight into the face of James Fraser, unquote.
Can you go back 2 seconds? What did you say? How did you say he needed to go use the little boy's room? What was your phrase you just used?
He had to go do the necessary.
Okay, I'm going to say that from now on. Excuse me. I'm
gonna you like that?
Yes. Pardon me. I'll be right back. I have to go do the necessary.
It's better than Man About a Dog. I never got that one.
What? Okay. I never heard that one.
Yeah, I have to go see A Man About a Dog?
Never heard that one. I've heard drop the kids off at the pool. I know someone who said, I had to go drop the kids off at the pool. What took so long? The fat kid wouldn't jump.
That's bad.
Okay, so I found this list on Reddit, and it says, what are the funniest ways to say you have to take a poop? And I have, of course, dropped your kids off at the pool. I've heard that one before.
Haven't heard that one.
They once had someone say to them they had to go home because they were crowning.
That's disgusting.
Honk out a dirt snake.
Oh, that's gross. Honk out?
Honk out a dirt snake. Hang on.
I'm afraid. If it tickles you, I'm gonna be crying. Can you?
I'm
not
going to
it?
Unleash the brown bear. Unleash the brown bear.
That's just stupid.
I'm prairie dogging over here. There's a turtle.
Oh, I've heard.
Out.
I've turtle. I heard the turtle thing.
Download a brown load.
I mean, I guess that's kind of silly.
Come on, my sub needs to leave dry dock. Got to do some paperwork.
That's just weird.
Time to jettison all this sadness from my colon.
artistic.
Take the Browns to the Super Bowl.
I get it. Took me a second.
Pinch a loaf. That one's not very fun.
That's like 80s.
Nature's 90s. Calling. Don't know how it got my number.
Nah.
Test the plumbing. Just having a Winnie the Pooh.
I don't know why that tickles me, but it does.
Drop a deuce. I've heard that one.
That's not new.
Drop off some timber.
That's kind of gross.
Time to paint the toilet.
That's just, oh.
Some shit's about to go down.
At least they're honest. I know.
Laying cable.
Oh, that's just, what?
Baking a loaf.
Baking is not pooping. Baking is holding it in.
Teach that toilet a lesson it won't soon forget. Exorcise the demons.
Exorcise.
Okay, grammar.
Stop it. That's not grammar. That's a word.
Exercise.
Exercise is to go pump iron. Exorcise is what you do to get rid of demons. Come on now. They're different words.
You don't know how I poop. I could exercise it out.
That's true. But you said demon.
I could exercise a demon.
What, like go pump iron with him?
Sure. Pump it out.
So Jamie had come back. John's words upon seeing him are classic. Quote, "I fear you take me at a disadvantage, Mr. Fraser," he said, fastening his breeches with as much self-possession as he could muster. Dude, I hope they keep that in there. That's too funny. Jamie looks John over. He literally gives him, Diana explicitly says this, or expressly says this, he gives him the once over. He looks him down and up, and he looks over his shoulder at the soldiers, who have muskets pointed at him. And then Jamie's mouth twitches, and he says, quote, "I think you take me at the same, Major," unquote. Oh, my goodness. Lisa T. writes, "Lord John describes Jamie as being like a red deer, not a red devil. This brings to mind several things. When Jamie was living in the cave, he felt more animal than man. It also symbolizes predator and prey. But it was Lord John who was in the vulnerable, undignified posture," as Diana writes, "and Jamie, though he is being hunted, is not captured. They are both at a disadvantage." And finally, Martina P. writes, "It really goes deep under my skin every time Jamie mentions Claire, like when he picks all the greens from the moor to feed to his prisoners. I love how he still follows Claire's nutritional advice, hence his beautiful white teeth." And that is one of our shortest chapters thus far.
Good Lord. And that was chapter 9. Join us next week when we discuss chapter 10, entitled White Witch's Curse.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, Audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Outlander Pod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.